Rush into Old Navy today for this can't-miss one-day deal. 50% off all Old Navy active for the family. Get the workout wear you need at a huge 50% off one day only today. Hurry in or miss out at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid 10/20, select styles only, excludes in-store clearance.
You are Locked On Broncos, your daily podcast on the Denver Broncos, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
And the Denver Broncos have taken Super Bowl 50.
All right, you are Locked On Broncos. I am Chad Jensen, the publisher of MileHighHuddle.com. And with me is my co-host, my good buddy, Luke Polglaze, a semi-pro football coach, an NFL draft analyst, among many other things. Luke, that was a tough loss. How are you, my friend?
It was a tough game to watch. Got plenty to talk about this week.
Oh, yes, we do. But Locked On Broncos, we're not here to just report the news. You can get that anywhere. Today we're here to give you a more in-depth analytical look at your favorite team, so please be sure to tell your friends about the show, share the episodes on social media, and help us light this thing up, because we are committed to bringing you a daily podcast that focuses entirely on your Denver Broncos at least 5 days a week. Luke and I we're just as sick and maniacal about Broncos football as you are. And the home, of course, of Locked On Broncos is Audio Boom. But make sure to subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher, because the Broncos have only 3 games left, but each one of those games is going to be must-win. So here we are. The Denver Broncos badly needed a win in Tennessee, but they came up short, losing to the Titans 13-10. And it's kind of hard to know where to start with this one, because we knew, Luke, that Tennessee's exotic smash mouth was going to put some points on the board. They were going to suck some clock. And in the first half, you know, that's what it came down to. They possessed the ball for more than 20 of the first 30 minutes, went into halftime up 13-0. And the Broncos, you know, they did not convert on third down in the first half. It was absolutely frustrating and mind-numbing to watch. In fact, the Broncos didn't get their first conversion on the money down until halfway through the fourth quarter. Good luck winning on the road with that level of, you know, offensive ineptitude.
Yeah, and this really was kind of an offensively inept performance from the Broncos in the first half. And that starts with, you know, a guy like Trevor Siemian, who last game we were incredibly encouraged by what he showed. And then this game, I think he really showed that, like I said last time, you know, we need a complete game from him. He can't just play half a game. And that really shone through in the way that he performed. And it translated, you know, to the offense as the whole. Really just coaching was also an issue. There's still no reason Tyson Brilo should be out there. There's no reason that you put James Ferentz in at the up back if you're going to pass the ball. So that just tips the defense that it's a run. A lot of coaching decisions didn't make sense. It was just a sloppy performance all around.
Sloppy, unprepared. They didn't seem to be focused. It was like the defense were the only guys that came to play football and win a ball game today. And, you know, by virtue of the time of possession, and I think Denver's fear, the coach's fear of Tennessee's rushing attack, Gary Kubiak didn't even really try to establish the run. The Broncos finished with just 9 rushing attempts of their own, totaling a measly 18 yards. And much like how Devontae Booker's career started out, Justin Forsett lost a fumble on his first carry as a Bronco. That fumble began essentially what was a comedy of errors for the Broncos offense, and I want to talk more about that. But first, Luke, let's talk about Justin Forsett just for a minute. I mean, you can't excuse that fumble. You know, it was egregious, absolutely unacceptable. But when he did touch the ball, I mean, it's not like he had crazy production, 6 carries for 17 yards, 3 receptions for 18. But he did bring a little juice to the offense. You know, just some speed, some quickness, elusiveness that we haven't seen for many, many weeks, maybe even all year. And he did have that 20-yard run get called back on a Matt Paradis holding penalty. But talk about what you saw, Luke, from Justin Forsett, you know, despite that unfortunate fumble to start things off.
Yeah, well, he's a littler dude, but he's slippery. We really saw that kind of shine through. Just making guys miss at the second level is really something that's been lacking all year. When they had C.J. Anderson and Devontae Booker toting the rock, that's more of a thunder and thunder combination like we see, across the way in Tennessee. Yep. In that game. But, Forsett is a very different kind of back. He's more that slippery, grease lightning type of player, and that really is a different change of pace. And that's the kind of guy that you like to put in there on third down and throw screens to, because he will create with plays like that in his hands.
Yeah, it's certainly an element that you could argue has been lacking since the days of Ronnie Hillman. C.J. Anderson has the ability to do some of those same things. But really, you could just see, I think, that Forsett, his vision is just at a more developed level. Devontae Booker's still not quite seeing things. I loved Forsett's burst. I mean, he didn't pick up a lot of yards, with the exception of that 20-yarder that got called back. But he just had an explosive first step that I think, if the Broncos at a coaching level can figure out how to scheme correctly, they can capitalize on. But I keep coming back, Luke, to the missed opportunities. The Forsett's fumble. And then you have Emmanuel Sanders, who went into Week 14 without a single drop pass on the season, drops two, including a deep ball down the left sideline. And Trevor Siemian, he battled, but he missed a surefire touchdown to Demaryius Thomas with the Broncos down 13-0 early in the fourth quarter. It was on a third down, and, Gary Kubiak then chose to go for it on fourth down instead of kicking the field goal. I actually was okay with them going for it there, Luke. I thought it was the right call, but they just couldn't punch it in on fourth down.
Yeah, I don't mind that decision really one bit whatsoever there. You got an offense that is really kind of a just pounded out offense. They're not explosive. Really, the only explosive member of that offense is Mariota, but otherwise they will take 4 or 5 yards out of you every time. So, they're backed up that far. You know what they're going to come out with. So just make them kind of try to get out of their own corner. I don't disagree with that call.
Well, then later in the game, after Siemian connects with Emmanuel Sanders on a touchdown to put the Broncos on the board for the first time, they finally have a shot to take the lead. It's third and goal from the Tennessee 16-yard line. Siemian drops back, kind of eludes some pressure, hits Benny Fowler down the seam in the end zone, but Fowler dropped it, forcing the Broncos to settle for a field goal. And that did narrow the gap, to 3 points. And unfortunately as well, then it retroactively puts Kubiak's decision to go for it on fourth down earlier in the quarter under the microscope. But the Broncos got rid of one of their 8 receivers that we haven't talked about yet because it happened over the weekend, putting Marlon Brown on injured reserve. But they still have 7, which is a lot. Fowler's drop, egregious in and of itself, Luke. It makes me wonder if that might cost him a job.
Well, that might cost him a job. That offensive pass interference that was called him might cost him a job. He just had a poor game. And in a game that saw even Cody Latimer make a catch.
Cody!
Yeah, I know, right? If we can't get Siemian or Lynch to get the ball to him, have we really considered Riley Dixon yet?
Let's get the punter.
Exactly right. So, he's struggling, Fowler, that is. He's obviously struggling to make an impact on offense when his number is called to go out there. And this could be, this could be one of those situations where the coaches are kind of weighing their options if they want to make a change on the roster, and kind of really are looking at him as one of those candidates for, he is practice squad eligible, I believe. So maybe we just, kind of drop him back and stash him down there.
And also, he has, in his defense, been battling a knee injury. But, if you're good enough to play, then there's no excuse. The Broncos could probably find a way to sneak him or put him on injured reserve without raising any eyebrows. But, that's just – these games are must win. And you need guys who are able to execute. And Fowler just, as you pointed out too, a couple of things he did that really set his team back. But the dagger, of course, was A.J. Derby. The Broncos defense forces that one last stop, and Siemian gets one more shot to win the game or send it to overtime, starting from his own 2-yard line, which that's a tall order. But he had 2.5 minutes basically to go. Starts marching the Broncos down the field, connects on 5 of 6 throws, But on that fifth completion, Derby gets stripped. He kind of gets hit, and on one side and on the other side, the tackler's got his arm on the ball, and the torque kind of helps the Tennessee linebacker, might have been the safety, but strip the ball. Titans recover, which seals the victory for Tennessee. And I really would hate to be A.J. Derby today. It was bad, but his turnover was really, Luke, it was the last act in a comedy of errors that saw Kubiak's offense literally fumble away the game.
Well, I think if we kind of take that fumble as the real catalyst for the loss, I think that's kind of missing the picture that was the final drive, which was just atrocious clock management. The Broncos were operating without any kind of urgency. There was no kind of get on ball, get set. They were kind of looking to the sideline, just hanging around, waiting for the call to come in. There was very little urgency from the quarterback position on down. And I think, you know, that fumble, you can't excuse that. You got to protect that ball. But I think, again, we're seeing AJ Derby really mature and kind of take himself into that number two tight end position. I mean, he was targeted five times, caught all five balls for 57 yards. That's a pretty good day at the races for a number two tight end. And while he's got to clean up the ball security issue right there, you know, this is a guy who we're really seeing develop into a passing target underneath for this offense, which is what Kubiak likes. It's what Dennison likes. And, you know, we can debate about Dennison right now, but this is the guy that they like to use. He's just got to be way better with the ball right there with the game on the line.
Yeah, you got a feel for him, and I thought it was kind of a cool moment. I don't know if anyone else caught this, but you could see Matt Paradis, you know, as the scrum is kind of guys are pulling off the pile, and we're seeing that, you know, Tennessee's recovered, the refs signal, and A.J. Derby's just kind of about 2-3 feet outside the scrum. He's on his knees. He's kind of like just dazed, like, I can't believe I just did that. And Matt Paradis, being the leader, walks over there, puts his arms on his shoulder pads, helps him up, gives him a little talking to, you know, pick him back up type thing. And that's good to see. It was terrible, a terrible, terrible mistake. But you're right, this kid has turned into something, I think, that down the road the Broncos, you know, he's going to really pay some dividends to the Broncos. And I want to talk about the defense, Luke, but before we do, let's talk about SeatGeek really quick. SeatGeek is, of course, the smartest, easiest way to find tickets for the football games you want to see up close and in person this season. There's two more opportunities for you to catch a home Broncos game this year. This coming week against the New England Patriots, week 15, and then week 17 against the Oakland Raiders. Both those bouts are going to be filled with fireworks, and there's nothing like being in the stadium for the biggest plays of the year. With SeatGeek, it's never been easier to get the guaranteed seats you want for great value. And I do have the SeatGeek app on my phone. I've shown my friends, my family, and it's by far the easiest way we've found to shop for tickets, because we can be anywhere and, you know, you tap your screen, find seats instantly for the game that you want to see. And with SeatGeek, you always get the best deal on every ticket because they go out and price compare for you. They search multiple ticket sites and make sure that you get the lowest available price. Plus, SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck, which is why each and every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. And you'll immediately see any underpriced seats. You'll be able to find the best deals that are going to fit your budget, because NFL games, NFL tickets, especially on the secondary market, they can be pricey. Plus, every ticket on SeatGeek that you buy is backed by their 100% guarantee, so you can shop with confidence. Best of all, Locked On Broncos listeners get a $20 rebate off your first SeatGeek purchase. Here's how you do that. Download the SeatGeek app, go to the Settings tab, click Add a Promo Code, enter promo code LO Broncos, and then SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So go download the SeatGeek app. There's still plenty of football left to be played. Enter promo code LO Broncos today. Now, Luke, the Broncos defense gave up a touchdown on Tennessee's opening drive. But from there, they really were the heroes once again. It was kind of the old bend but don't break. They kept the game within reach for that sputtering offense. They gave up only 253 total yards, which on paper, that seems like a solid game. But then you look, 180 of them were on the ground.
Yeah, that opening drive really just kind of, I think, came out and punched Denver in the mouth physically and I would say emotionally. From there, they really did, I think, kind of steadied up. But again, you look at what they did. Marcus Mariota ended up with 8 carries for 38 yards. You know, they did not contain him. He's a young quarterback who really, I think he showed himself to be a very capable runner today. Did not have the best day passing the ball by any means, but he was only asked to throw the ball 20 times. Now, you know, he only completed 6 of those, but you know, they did a good job defending the pass is what I'm trying to get out here. But
right,
running the ball, he was a weapon. They didn't take that away. And really this ground game just kind of went all over them. DeMarco Murray ended up with almost 100 yards. That's an issue. They didn't allow that 100 yard game. So stat geeks out there, I guess, take solace in that fact.
Yay. Yeah. I mean, speaking to Mariota, he had that one pass to the tight end Delaney Walker on that first drive, I believe it was on third down, that was just a beautiful throw. It made me kind of sit up and take notice and go, wow, you know, that's not easy to do on the Broncos defense. But from there on out in the passing game, with the exception of that one deep ball on their last real drive of the game to Matthews, yeah, that went over the top on Tlaib, Broncos bottled up the Tennessee's passing offense. But then the rushing attack, I mean, it was like, all you know, Tennessee farts, they get 5 yards. I mean, it was that automatic for most of the game, and it wasn't until about halfway through the third quarter that the Broncos really started to shore up on that side of things. But we got to talk about the Harry Douglas play. You know, for those who missed it, basically it was a running play in the first half that went away from Douglas. Douglas, of course, a wide receiver. The play was essentially over, and right before the whistle gets blown, you know, the momentum's dying off on the play. Chris Harris, Harry Douglas, they're kind of on the other side, opposite side of the play, kind of on the peripheral. And you can see it on the replay. Douglas, like, literally, you can see him look at Chris Harris Jr.'s legs, and then he just rockets, just dives right at his knee. And it's been a while, honestly, since I've seen a play that dirty. And it really kind of conjures up images of Vontaze Burfict. No flag, of course. Harris goes down, writhing in pain. Luke, it was absolutely despicable.
I would say that's a pretty good word for it. It was dirty. It was intent to injure. I really can't say, you know, I couldn't describe it any more than that. You know, this was a play where he was diving for his knee, helmet first. This was a play with intent to injure, and I think that the NFL office really has to respond appropriately to that.
Yeah, and I would think that they do, and they would, and they will, especially being, I mean, you don't like to think of it this way, but Chris Harris Jr., I mean, he's a Pro Bowler. He's a high visibility type of player, and that was just, I mean, it was unnecessary. It's one thing when that type of a play happens incidentally, you know, or even if he was at the point of attack or something, but he wasn't. It was absolutely unnecessary. But then on the ensuing play, Aqib Tlaib retaliates for his boy on Tennessee's sideline on Harry Douglas. There's a big scrum. Denver, of course, loses 15 yards. But from there, really, I think it was kind of like a catalyst. The tide really turned for the Broncos defense. Tennessee ended up getting a field goal out of that drive by virtue of that 15 yards from Tlaib's penalty. But that whole thing fired up the Broncos' defense, and they didn't allow another point the rest of the game. Now, that was in the second quarter, but with Tlaib, you see why his teammates love him. You see why the Broncos as an organization have stuck behind him and value him despite some of his off-the-field concerns and obviously, you know, he's issues with his temperament. He's most certainly, though, got his teammates back, especially his PIC, his partner in crime, Chris Harris Jr.
Yeah, absolutely. And with a play like that, you really have to stick up for your teammates. And, you know, first of all, to send a message to the other team, hey, we're out here too. You know, we're still going to play. We're still going to be physical. And also to get your own team fired up. And, you know, there are different sides of coaches. I've certainly worked with coaches who, you know, will take that penalty. Tlaib arguably could have been ejected, which was dangerous.
Right.
And there are coaches out there who will take that penalty, who will cheer that penalty because it gets your defense fired up. Personally, I am concerned about that because you can lose more than the yardage. You can lose that player. And that's a concern. You know, you can take out as much as you want on Harry Douglas between the whistles when it's legal. But after the play like that, out of bounds, that's when you worry about it having bigger effects. Talib is going to get himself a fine this week as well because of his actions.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, like I say, me personally, I look at that and I was like, right on, Talib. Good for you, bud. And again, it costs – the Titans were in business anyway. They'd already crossed over into Denver territory. And really what the penalty did was ensure, you know, a makeable field goal, which Tennessee capitalized on. But as you say, it sent a message. And honestly, I didn't see much hide nor hair of Harry Douglas throughout the rest of that game. I think they, you know, that was the type of thing where they didn't want to risk possibly any other incidents. But, you know, you look at the pass rush. One thing good that came out of today's game is that DeMarcus Ware, he notched another sack, and it actually moved him up the all-time sack list. He was tied with a couple of guys on the list at number 8. Now he's in sole possession of the 8th place all-time, so good for DeMarcus Ware. But, Luke, let's talk about the playoff picture here. I mean, this loss hurt. There's no doubt about it. It drops the Broncos down to 8-5, and as of right now, they still hold the 6th seed. Miami won. Pittsburgh won, but if Baltimore loses on Monday night to New England, the Broncos will hold on to the 6th seed. That's the bright side, the silver lining. The downside is that they've now lost 5 games, and their last 3 games of the season are literally against the 3 best teams in the AFC.
Well, they say one thing in the NFL, and that's you got to win to get into the playoffs. The Broncos are 8-5 right now, and that's not going to be good enough. They arguably could have to win all 3 games and put themselves at, you know, something like 11-5 just to get into the playoffs. This is a situation, I think, where Denver really has to look at the competition and see Baltimore right now. Baltimore and Pittsburgh are kind of their number one threat for that 6th seed. Miami is right there with them, but they probably just lost Ryan Tannehill for the season. So, you know, depending on what that test shows up, I think it could. What I heard was it could be his ACL, which would obviously be a huge blow to that Dolphins team, who was really just starting to turn the corner under familiar face Adam Gase. This is a really tough stretch for Denver. Having the Patriots at home, they're lucky that they're going to get them the week after they play the Ravens. Ravens-Patriots games are some of my favorites to watch. They are always uber competitive, and these are two teams that they just take the physicality to entirely new levels when playing each other. So Denver's going to get a banged up Patriots team, hopefully a slightly sore Patriots team on a short week. And this is really the time where you have to take advantage of it if they can get that one win, and then, you know, see if they can split one out of going into Kansas City and hosting Oakland. Man, they got to get at least 2 out of those 3 wins, you expect.
Well, you hope so. And the good news is, as we know, the New England Patriots, under Bill Belichick and Tom Brady have struggled historically to win at Mile High. Last year, the Broncos really kind of shocked the world. The Patriots went into Week 12 undefeated. The Broncos were without Peyton Manning. Brock Osweiler and company managed to steal a win there, hand them their first loss of the season, which was the first of what would become 4. The Broncos managed to secure the 1 seed. This time around, that's bye-bye. That went bye-bye when they lost to the Chiefs 2 weeks ago. But, you know, for me, Luke, the biggest thing before we get out of here, you know, talking about takeaways for me is that, you know, essentially how many games, regular season games, is Kubiak coach now? 29 as a Broncos head coach? Something like that.
Anyway, something like that, yeah.
For the last 29 or so games, we've seen the Broncos play absolutely inept offensive football. They play the cards extremely close to the vest, leaning on their defense week in and week out, hoping that they can muster up just enough juice offensively in the second half, usually late in the game, fourth quarter, to either come up from behind and tie or take the lead from behind and then lean on their defense one last time to get a stop or a turnover, you know, in the clutch. More often than not, that approach, that formula, has worked for the Broncos, as we know. I mean, they won a Super Bowl last year off the very same formula. The offense was just basically just as bad last year under Peyton Manning and Brock Osweiler, respectively. But it's getting to the point, I think, where they've pushed their luck. They've kind of used up all the juice that the football gods have given them in that regard. And I think we've seen over the last, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, late in the game, here the Broncos go expecting, you know, their defense to save the day. And it doesn't always work out that way. And in this case, you know, the defense did do everything they needed to do to give the offense an opportunity to win the game. But when you wait that long to finally turn it on, Luke, you know, that's when things can go wrong. When the stakes are raised that much higher, time is running out, the margin of error becomes so slim, you know, it's the type of thing I think where the Broncos have kind of they've tapped out of that, you know, whatever good favor they've received in that regard. And these final three games, these are three very, very good teams that aren't going to let you do that to them. I mean, Tennessee, hey, hats off to them. Their offense, that power run game, is certainly a formidable weapon. Marcus Mariota really seems to be developing into a fine young quarterback, but they're not a heavyweight. Okay, that defense. I mean, the Broncos should have put up 20 points on them today, easy. Okay, but they didn't, and that's not. I mean, we were saying this time last year that it's not a formula for winning. It's not a formula for making it into the playoffs. It's not a formula to win a Super Bowl, and we were proven wrong. But this time around, the Broncos don't have that Peyton Manning juice. You know, it's gone. They're relying on a second-year quarterback, you know, that's still in his first year as a starter, and I think they've really pushed their luck. And this far into the season, you're not going to see a sudden turnaround offensively. As Luke has iterated many times on this show, this is kind of what it is. What you're seeing from the offensive line, that's probably not going to change. What you're seeing from Trevor Siemian, you know, he's yet to play a complete 60 minutes. It's not going to change. The only way possible, though, for the Broncos to make it through this three-week gauntlet is for the Broncos offensively to raise their stakes. And Luke, the odds tell us it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, as I said, I think it was last week, at some point, there is no cavalry. This is, you know, this is kind of where the Broncos are as a team. They have a non-functional run game, an inconsistent quarterback who I have some thoughts on his quarterback mechanics I'll talk about later in the weeks, in this week. You know, they've got a wide receiver core who kind of struggles with drops at inopportune moments, a turnstile at offensive line, special teams. We're still dealing with just stupid penalties, inconsistency there. Defensively, well, we can't hold up against the run. You know, the coaches are saying we can't hold up against the run. Well, we can't stop this team in Tennessee. They keep running the ball on us. And then you look at the secondary, they're much improved, I think, in my opinion, over last season even, which is really saying something behind that pass rush. So this is a team that has a lot of question marks going forward. And if they really want to make a run in this postseason, this is gut check time. And this is time where you show what you can do. And that's what a loss like this, dropping them to 8-5, can really serve as.
Absolutely. It really is gut check time. That's the silver lining, is that, you know, the Broncos still have the opportunity to utilize this loss as a catalyst to turn the ship around. And let's hope that they can do it. But, you know, for Luke and I, one of the benefits we have joining the Locked On Podcast Network is the opportunity to work closely with our advertising partners. We enjoy taking the time on the show to talk about these partners and help to reach new people. Companies we believe in, and it's a powerful thing. It's not something that you know, we take lightly, and we're always looking to grow our relationships with our advertisers. If you're listening to this show as a business owner and you'd like to reach the male demographic between the ages of 18 and 44, your company should be sponsoring this podcast, because 98% of the Locked On Broncos listenership is male, 80% of which are between the ages of 18 to 44. Our rates are very reasonable. Feel free to reach out to us at lockedonbroncos@gmail.com to talk about it. But I think that's going to do it for today's episode of Locked On Broncos, our gut reaction. Go check out the other phenomenal podcasts on the network. You know, Locked On Patriots is one you're going to want to tune into at some point this week. Locked On NFL, Locked On Fantasy are also must-listens. You can find Luke on Twitter, at Luke Polglaze, myself, at Chad N. Jensen. We want to hear from you, so hit us up. The show's Twitter handle is at Locked On Broncos. Please, everybody, take a second and go follow the Twitter. We're still trying to grow that thing from scratch. And don't forget to subscribe. For Luke, I'm Chad. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Mile High Huddle.